By now, I think many of you would have seen the pictures of former Australian of the Year Grace Tame meeting with the Prime Minister at the lodge yesterday. Cameras captured her, stony-faced and giving Scott Morrison the side eye during the handshakes and staged photo opportunities, although she did share a smile with the Prime Minister's wife, Jenny Morrison. Some of you praised her for expressing her genuine emotions, whilst others criticised her behaviour as childish. It's part of a broader conversation around the treatment of women and expectations around their behaviour that's played out across the country over the past 12 months. The Guardian's Amy Remakis delves into all of this in her new essay on Reckoning, which is out now and is a brilliant read. Welcome to RM Breakfast, Amy.
Hello, pleased to be here.
What do you make of Grace Tame's interaction with the Prime Minister? What message did it send and why has it been so divisive?
The message that it sent, I think, was that women are not going to play nice anymore, which I think is, on the whole, a positive. I don't think that anyone should have to hide their true feelings when they're uncomfortable, but we expect it so much from women. We're constantly told to smile as we're walking down the street, to play nice, to make other people feel better, even if it's at the expense of ourselves. So the fact that she was uncomfortable and she showed that while still being civil, she still shook the Prime Minister's hand. She did, as you said, have a smile for Jenny Morrison, who was also there. But she made her point that she didn't want to be in that photo. And I think that's completely fine. So we need to question why we see that as divisive, why we see a woman giving her true feelings as being something that has sparked a national conversation.
You were on the project last night, and I want to play an exchange you had with Peter Van Onselen, who wrote a column in the Australian newspaper yesterday saying Grace Tame was ungracious, rude and childish in refusing to smile for the cameras. And he questioned why she even attended the event. Here it is.
I just think if you can't be polite to the Prime Minister of the country, I get it if she can't be polite to him, but then just don't go, because otherwise I think it's immature.
If she didn't go, that would have caused a huge ruckus in News Corp in particular.
Unlike
but
this?
Why should she stand there and smile? And why do we have to be polite?
I don't think she should stand there and smile. I think she just shouldn't go if you can't
you
show basic courtesies to the Prime Minister.
About how she was being childish because she showed her authentic feeling.
That was you on the project last night in an exchange with Peter Van Onselen. That's also gone viral. There's a lot of viral moments here. Is his view something many people in the media and wider Australian public share? I've got to say on the text line there have been people saying she should have shown more grace, boom, boom, playing on the word, her name. That's clearly a view that others beyond Peter Van Onselen have.
Yeah, it absolutely is a view that others have, but it doesn't necessarily make it a right view. I mean, I think when we start to elevate the politics of civility over the issues that Grace Tame and others have been raising, we need to have a serious think about why we're all having a conversation about whether or not a woman should smile in the presence of the Prime Minister for a photo, rather than the last 12 months that she on the issues that she has spent elevating. I mean, Grace Tame is somebody who had her agency taken from her when she was a child, when she was groomed by a person in charge of her, by a teacher. She had all of her decisions taken away from her then. She basically had her entire childhood taken. And she has made her adulthood about speaking up and about not allowing anybody else to take that power from her. And so she has been her authentic self. She has done such amazing work in her time of Australian of the Year, and on the eve of her handing over that title to another very worthy person, we're all talking about whether or not she should have smiled in an uncomfortable situation. Why do the hurt feelings of other people rate higher than how she was feeling in that moment?
Did we see this sort of commentary during that also very famous photo opportunity between Josh Frydenberg and Kenneth Hayne? You'll remember Kenneth Hayne declined to shake the Treasurer's hand when handing over the Banking Royal Commission report.
Yeah, we didn't see it. We saw a lot of people sort of laughing about how uncomfortable Kenneth Hayne seemed in that photo op when, you know, there was a moment where somebody said, like, you know, will you shake hands or whatever? And he was like, no, no. Like, you know, I'm just here to hand over the Treasury papers. This is my work done. We didn't see it because we're used to men showing their true feelings. We're used to men behaving however they would like in the public space and in the media. And they can pretty much say or do whatever they'd like, and we all just kind of get on with our days because it's normal. It's only when a woman acts outside of expectations that we start having these conversations, and it's frankly, it's ridiculous.
In fact, you were making that point, I thought, quite powerfully yesterday to Peter Van Onselen about his own commentary around the Prime Minister. And, you know, anyone who sort of followed this would know he's had kind of a blue with the Prime Minister's office, and he's been quite public, perhaps not polite himself, right?
Yeah, and he didn't receive, you know, the widespread criticism. In fact, he was backed in by quite a lot of people, particularly in the media. And, you know, he made the point that when the Prime Minister asked him to have a drink to smooth things over, he declined. Well, I mean, like, that's great, but I'm not sure whether everyone gets the opportunity to have an offer, to have the Prime Minister offer to have a drink with them to smooth things over. I'm not sure that that's something that's been offered to Brittany Higgins or to Grace Tame or to many of the other women or Indigenous activists or anyone who has raised issues with the way that the Prime Minister or the Prime Minister's office has conducted itself. Georgie Dent is another person who had issues with the Prime Minister's office who I don't think got the offer of a drink. It just again shows the sort of doubled standards and the privilege so many men hold in this space and unthinkingly use and just think applies to everyone. Well, it doesn't.
Turning to your very powerful essay, you wrote it after Brittany Higgins went public after her alleged rape in Parliament House. There are a lot of shocking stories that happen in that building. But what was the mood like when Brittany Higgins' allegations were first revealed?
I would say it was pretty uncomfortable the day that the story came out, that Samantha Maiden published the story and then Lisa Wilkinson followed up that evening with an interview on the project. It was very uncomfortable because nobody wants to think of their workplace as being an area where something like that can happen. But the truth is it can happen anywhere at any time. No one and nowhere is immune from this sort of, you know, allegation. And that's why it's shocking that the response was so muted on that first day. We saw a lot of people just kind of wanting to whoosh the story over and just sort of go, oh, well, not sure what we can report here, so let's just kind of try and move on. And I think it was really seeing the nation's leaders follow that and sort of say, oh, well, we can't talk about it because there's a police investigation, which was not true at the time. The police had not been investigating it, where they just sort of said, oh, well, you know, we need to just sort of, you know, listen to Brittany, but we also need to just, you know, let processes play out. I think when the nation's leaders started talking like that, that's when you started to see a lot of people go, well, hang on, no, this is something that we need to talk about because we have a very serious allegation of violence against a woman in Parliament House. We can't just sweep this under the rug. This is not business as usual. And I think when the Prime Minister came out in the preceding days after that International Women's Day event and said that he'd spoken to his wife and now understood with clarity the issue because he needed to think about it as a father, I think that was really the linchpin for that explosion of rage, because why do we constantly have to think about things as somebody else's daughter or somebody else's mum or sister? Why can we not take this issue seriously just on the face of it? We don't do this with any other crime. We don't do it with burglary or, you know, with carjackings or anything else. We don't say, oh, well, you know, you chose to live in that neighbourhood or, you know, was your door open or anything. The only time we question this and we have a he said, she said conversation is when it comes against crime, against women. And when the nation's leaders started the conversation in that very similar vein, I think that's when people went, enough.
Rage is a central theme in your essay, but before rage, there is often silence and shame. How did you personally, as a survivor, actually work through those stages?
I'd say that you kind of do it all at once, and I'm probably still working through those stages. I mean, last night I almost cried on national TV because I was just so angry and in shock and just flabbergasted. And you kind of process all of those emotions at the same time when you're talking about an issue like this. And I'm not alone in that at all. I mean, when I've had to cover these issues quite a bit over my career. I was a police and I was a court reporter. You don't really expect it when you're covering politics. I mean, that's one of the huge privileges and advantages of covering politics is that, you know, nobody's dying at the end of the day. We're talking policy and we're talking disagreements. But when you start covering something like this, I mean, I was shocked. I did go into a state of just being struck dumb. I couldn't believe what I was hearing because I really hope that Australia is better than what we were seeing from our nation's leaders. And it was a slap in the face to see that no, we're not. And the conversations I have overheard from people in the pubs was the same conversations I was overhearing in, you know, the corridors of Parliament House. So I was struck dumb, and then the rage came pretty quickly and has probably been flowing ever since then. But rage and anger can be useful. We're just not used to seeing angry women.
And it's so well put. Rage is a term with negative connotations, especially gendered ones. Really, you know, women who are angry. I've been called an angry woman many times. You're so rude. You're so angry. But how can it help with coming to terms with what has happened and actually empowering women?
I think it can galvanise women or anyone who is angry and is using it positively, using it as a drive, as fuel. It can galvanise people. It's something that you can see in somebody else on a particular issue, and you can use it to spark their passion, to encourage them to come forward and to speak up and to do what they can to cause accountability and create action from that. We always look at anger as being negative, as you say, particularly with women. Nobody likes an angry woman. But when you saw a whole heap of angry women, they refused to be silent, they refused to be patted on the head, and they refused to be placated with the usual, like, oh, we're looking into this. They're demanding action. And a year on, they're still demanding action. They're not letting it go away. And that's fueled by anger. It's not fueled by, you know, anything else, any other emotion. It's fueled by pure rage, but it's a healthy one.
A healthy rage. Change takes time, Amy, and it's often uncomfortable, well, for some people. Is there hope that things will get better?
I don't think in the short term. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't think we've seen a huge amount of change over the last year, and I think we're unlikely to, because it does take time and people are comfortable with the status quo, and nobody wants to have a look at the giant systemic issues that we would have to overcome in order to make this change. But I do think that women have done enough in this space, that women have, you know, come out and they've performed their trauma and they've told their stories and they've been angry and they've screamed and they've shouted, and it's now time for the men to step up and not say, oh, we're listening, but to actually start doing something. So that means calling out those off-colour jokes, stopping your mates, you know, from going too far when they've maybe had a bit too much to drink, or, you know, are hounding somebody who is clearly not interested in them, and just stepping into that space so women don't have to carry the load, because honestly, we've done enough.
Yeah, it's pretty tiring. Hey, Amy, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
That's Amy Remakis from The Guardian. She's written a new essay on Reckoning, which is out now. And if this story has raised any issues for you, you can get help by calling the National Sexual Assault and Family Violence Counselling Helpline. The number is 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732.